Hello, everyone. I'm very proud to be here, especially working with the upper echelon. I'm a registered nurse. I've worked the trenches many, many years in combat, in hospitals, and in Indian healthcare. Because I've been with Indian healthcare for so many years, I've seen our program really grow. And I've been right there in the trench to work with a lot of the people that came in from Albuquerque and say, what do you do here? And of course, you know, as a nurse, we wear many hats. You knew you had policies and procedures you had to follow, not only within your company, but within your license. So I did a lot of programming for Indian healthcare, and I'm very proud that we're still progressing and still growing. And I was very glad that these guys came aboard and said, hey, we've got some ideas for you, because they helped implement those to help my program move along at a fairly good rapid pace. In any event, this is our little facility. We've been there about 5 years. Tulsa metro area has about 86,000 Indian people. Clinic patients, we average about 15,000 new people per year. Tulsa Public Schools has the largest Indian pupil population in the United States, so we got some wonderful opportunities there for stop chlamydia education and community resources to reach out to them. We provide comprehensive health services. We have medical, dental, optometry, behavioral health, and health education. I'm known as during my chlamydia program challenges that almost 0.1% of my patients were lost to follow-up, and this was due to unreliable phone numbers and addresses. Our Native American Indian people seem to be very nomadic, especially during the summertime during the powwows. We get a lot of patients that are traveling with friends or whatever to hit the powwows in Tulsa, and then they're gone, or they're coming in from other reservations, and they're gone. And it's always been a real issue in getting them in because they're ill and then trying to track them to get them treated. In those responsibilities in trying to track and treat my STDs, I pretty well worked with the medical people to make sure on each visit that they come in, every time they come in to visit, that we get a phone number, a current phone number, okay? I also sent a certified letter. A lot of my young girls are not capable of getting out and going to the post office to pick up a certified letter. I don't have time to go to the post office and pick up a certified letter if I'm working 5 days a week. They don't have transportation. I know their issues. In any event, I do send a certified letter and I send a regular letter. If I've still not heard from them, then I'll go to the medical provider and I'll let them know that I need a home visit, doctor's order, and I will go out to their community area and try to do some canvassing in the neighborhood to see if this person resides in this area. There are many times I've gone out to home visits where the trailers were at, and the trailer would actually be gone, and the trailer's been gone for like 2 weeks, you know, so there are some issues with treating and tracking. Other issues that we've noticed that's been some challenges was uncooperative condom use by partners. In 2006, our prior sexually transmitted infections averaged about 14. That's about 2 to 5 re-exposures per quarter. In 2007, I noticed that the prior STD infections was up to 17%, and again, that averages about 2 to 5 re-exposures per year. It's difficulty talking to the young ladies to find out why the re-exposure. I finally got them to sign a contract that they understand once I do treat them, it's abstinence for 2 weeks. And to get their partner treated, they're usually referred to the state health department. Educating the girls that their medication may not be a one-time dose, it may wind up being a 10 to 14 day dose. The policy is it's 2 weeks absence from the last dose of your medication. These young girls don't understand that, so lots of times that's how they get re-exposed, or it's because they got multiple partners and it don't rule who really gave who the infection. Again, we're talking about multiple partner encounters. I do contract contacts ineligible for Indian Health Service, I usually refer them to the closest health department. And I let the girls know that that is their responsibility to notify. If they're afraid of this guy or if this guy's incarcerated, then they contact the state health department, or they can contact whatever institution that person was incarcerated in and talk with the medical department. My chlamydia program enhancements was to promote timely treatments to sexually transmitted infections. So a systemized approach was established. What I'm doing is I enter daily every path that goes through my facility. Plus, I have an STD logbook. Okay. Lab ensures all positive chlamydia results are sent to the public health nurse for patient tracking, so that I may use my direct observation therapy on treatment, partner management, and FIDO reporting. I don't only do this for chlamydia, but I do this for all sexually transmitted infections. This requires intense case management, and it's resulted in about a 99.9% of cases tracked and treated within the first 10 days of my sexually transmitted lab collection. So that's pretty good. And I know the longer I don't contact these girls, like I'm at a conference now, they can easily be lost. So I stay on top of it. Lab gives me my results every morning. They don't need to talk to me. They just run them off, throw them into my public health box. I usually pull a chart, get with the providers, get them to sign off the original lab, and then that gives me the opportunity to track my people and get them into the facility. Now, lots of times our doctors are already booked 2 or 3 weeks in advance, so I encourage the patient to come through me. If the patient is concerned about confidentiality, again, we support them and let them know that it is confidential, but if they want their doctor present, they can come to my office and I will make sure that the doctor is there at the time that they come in for their lab results. I've also quarterly checked with pharmacy on my Zithromax distribution list, and I perform chart audits for missed reported cases. Lots of times if I'm out of the clinics, it's just I am this week. If an STD comes through, lots of times my providers recruit prophylactically, and then a couple of days later the lab results come in, the doctor signs off and says, I've already treated them, I'm not going to worry about it. Okay. So again, my check and balance is making sure that lab gives me a copy of any STD that goes through, and then I go back with pharmacy and check who all they dispense their medications to. Lots of times the doctors will treat prophylactically. Something looks like this, so we're going to treat it prophylactically because either we've got a long weekend coming up or vacation time. In any event, I wind up doing the chart audits on a quarterly basis and making FIDO reports. The stop chlamydia data, Scott helped put this all together, but it was kind of looking at how to newly develop stop chlamydia projects off of our quarterly reports and to provide routine analysis of project level screening outcomes and how this can be used to evaluate and better target screening efforts. So he's kind of put this together, but this is, you can't read it up real close, but a lot of this is collected through male, female, age, how long it took me to get the patient in and stuff like that. It's just some basic stats. Scott took those stats and he says, well, I can look at your chlamydia positive among females by age groups. And at the Indian Healthcare Resource Center of Tulsa in 2006, there was a high positive among the youth. There was no positivity found in older age groups. Now, who made those decisions? I confronted the doctors and I said, how do you know who to test for chlamydia and who not to? And basically, he'll just do a routine test. Are you sexually active? And they go off of that, or how many partners you have, or if you're married or single. A lot of his stuff just comes out of the doctor's health assessment. Data could inform more effective targeting of services. As we got further along and was able to get some funding to get a pediatrician, I finally got with the pediatrician and said, okay, now you're dealing with the teens. How are you going to assess who to screen and who not to screen for Native American Indians? And therefore, very long time, when I first got to Indian healthcare, they had men doctors, okay? So it was really hard to get our Native American Indian women to come in to get a pap test or even to get a mammal test because it's kind of a cultural thing. They didn't want a man doctor. So we finally was able to work through the years and finally get a nurse practitioner in, and then we finally even went from nurse practitioner to a nurse PA. Then we started getting female doctors, and that really increased our screening efforts and a difference in our stats. As we began to get female doctors in, we were able to reach a little bit of our elderly, matured women, but again, a lot of our patient load falls either terribly young or above that 50 age group. Chlamydia positive among females by age group in 2007, you can see that it increased in high positivity among 15 and 19 year olds because we finally was able to get a pediatrician in there, a female, and mothers were beginning to get their daughters in, knowing that they were sexually active and putting them on birth control to prevent an unplanned pregnancy and also screening for STDs. There was a slight increase in positivity among even our 20 to 24 year olds, slight increase in positivity from 25 to 29, and then a slight increase in positivity between 30 and 65 year age groups. And again, this is all due to improved screening because now we had female doctors and we were just kind of right on target is what we should be looking for. Again, this is just the graph to show you the comparison of the age and the years. It's much, much improved. This also just shows you more screening, much, much more reaching out to provide services to the people that really need it and educating them. So all in all, the practical, consistent, and efficient keys to preventing chlamydia in my program in Indian Country is just intensive case management, which requires getting correct addresses and phone numbers, networking with the healthcare providers, letting the doctors know I'm here. If these are reportable diseases, I need to know them. Let me take that responsibility away from you. You've only got 15 minutes if you sign up, if you feel comfortable with it. I also work with the lab personnel, and I work with the local and state health department. So I've got a one-on-one on networking. I pretty well go to their infection control meetings. I go visit their clinic. I take them my cards. I get their cards so that way when I'm talking to somebody, I can relate with the face. Again, the continuous demographic updating of patients' phones and addresses during each visit. Providing them accessible screening and treatment services targeted at the high-risk age groups and distribution of your sexually transmitted infection prophylactic education. Again, once I spend my time educating them, I have them decide that they understand that this is a reportable STD. Do they understand abstinence? Do they understand the condom use? I give them condoms. I practice showing them where they feel comfortable in using a condom. Question and answer time. Thank you.
Great. Well, the presentations are over. We do have about half an hour's time for question and answers. So let's have a discussion. David. He's a one-man shop. Mm-hmm. What suggestions do you have?
Yeah, creative. Yeah.
Gloria. But I think one of the things, and you've probably thought of this, David, is with the advent of NAT technology and the ability to test urine, is you don't need a clinical site to collect the specimen. You could train an outreach worker or someone, a local person within the sovereign nation or on the reservation that could collect specimens and do the necessary counseling. That may be one solution that might work in South Dakota. Scott and Lori probably have better ideas than I do. Right. You know, I think using the Infertility Prevention Project as a model for partnerships is probably a good idea. And, you know, certainly Scott and I will continue to discuss how we can outreach to other agencies and partners within Indian Country and outside of Indian Country to provide screening to Native American women. Thought just occurred to me, David, do you have for your... Or do you know that in your tuberculosis prevention program, you have healthcare workers who do DOT? I mean, that would be a model if, I mean, it might be an appropriate model to try to, I mean, you may not have to train, you may not have to hire anybody new, but when those DOT workers go out every 3 days, You know, they could do a mini health fair and collect specimens for chlamydia screening. Could do it. Right. Okay. Okay. That's the big barrier. Why do you think that is? I mean, you know, my guess is that we just haven't done. Okay. There are other pressing health issues. Also, you know, the other thing is we at CDC and IHS has probably done a little better job of this over the last few years is to gather and understand the data that's out there. We have not done a good job of trying to translate that into data that can be used to help convince people that there's an issue here. And I think over the next couple of years, if the Stop Chlamydia program expands as it has over the past year, we align it with the IPP sort of data set and start presenting this in venues such as the National STD Conference or your state and local health conferences, you know, yeah, sure, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Everybody has that one DIS that they'd like to clone. I think it's a good point that you bring up. You know, the data that we didn't show is, you know, there's high positivity across the country. Our screening coverage for chlamydia is maybe 40% nationally. So we know we're not getting to the people we need to get to. We've got to figure out ways to get that screening coverage up. And your example is a perfect example of some of the issues that we have, not only in South Dakota, but also in the Southwest, in Alaska, in the Southeast, getting traditional African American communities to access services, it's the same issue. Okay, let me see if I can repeat that question for the recording. But you're asking about, is there any information around home collected vaginal swabs or urine specimens that could be sent into a lab and results be presented to the patient and then treatment arranged for. Yes, there has been, and I encourage you to go talk to Charlotte Gatos. Her name is Charlotte Gatos, a researcher from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. She has, over the past 3 years, administered a website called iwantthekit.org. And unfortunately, it's just for the Maryland area, and I think Virginia just signed on because it's still a research project. They're still under IRB restrictions. But you basically go onto this website, you put in your mailing information, they send you a test kit, and it's open now to males also. So you basically urinate into a cup and send it back to the Johns Hopkins lab. You call probably about within 5 or 7 days later, you get your result over the phone. If you're positive, there is a human being on the other side of the phone who actually facilitates your getting treated. That person makes the call for you, makes the appointment for you at your local health clinic. It could be an STD clinic, it could be a family planning clinic. It's very labor intensive. What's been interesting is the positivity coming out of this particular research project has been fairly high in 15 to 19 year olds, about the same as other other projects in the nation. Same in the 20 to 24 year olds. What has been amazing is that in the 25 to 29 year olds, it's almost a 10% positivity, which is not what we expected at all in that age group. Charlotte is here, and she is in the program. She's talking about her iwantthekit.org project. It's really been eye-opening, and she's got a lot of good data over the last 3 years. People could get the kits mailed to them, or they could go into a pharmacy and pick one up. Almost nobody went to the pharmacy to pick one up. That was not an option that was utilized in the first 6 months of the project, so that is actually no longer an option. You had a comment. Yeah. Right. No, that is true. They are cleared, but you have to be at a doctor's office in order to do it. So you can have a woman self-collect a sample from her vagina, but it has to be in the clinical setting. John Papp left. I believe he's working with FDA to, get that restriction expand. Well, not the restriction expanded, but, get that bit of craziness out of FDA's mind. Yes. I mean, Charlotte's stuff is still research. We're starting to talk about translating it to program, but that's going to be fraught with difficulty. I think I saw, I think it's a difference from what you're used to as regional IPP screening criteria based on age and symptoms. And Gloria's facility, it's eligibility first. And then if you're eligible for services, as in most IHS facilities, if you're eligible, then you get whatever you want. Jennifer, I saw your hand up. Not officially. Yeah, well, The question was whether or not, given that there are a number of populations that have higher positivity than family planning clients, is CDC rethinking our requirement that 50% of IPP dollars that go to the state and local health departments be spent on IPP, on family planning clients? Let me just say that the 50% has always been presented as a hard and fast rule, and it's really not. The 50% has, if you look in the grant guidance, which hopefully will be published in about 2 months, so you'll have 90 days to respond. For those of you who don't know, the STD program announcement is also in a competitive cycle. This is our last project year, so by August, all 65 project areas are going to have to resubmit an extensive application to continue their funding. We've made significant changes to the grant application. The requirement is that the family planning partners and the STD program agree on how to spend that 50%. In most cases, it's agreed upon, based on looking at their own data, that the 50% should be used in family planning clinics. Now, if a particular state or directly funded city has data to show that, you know, they have higher positivity in this population, it's not family planning, and if the family planning people agree with getting a little less than that 50%, then that's fine. You can talk to me later about that more if you want, because it looks like you want to. Oh, I know you are. Yeah, and I would say if you're in a state and local health department and you've got a population that has a much higher prevalence than your family planning partners and you have the opportunity to shift resources, you should. That makes sense. We're asking you, again, for the STD people here, we're going to be asking you to look at your own data in your applications and plan your programs around your own data. We're really forcing that in the application process, something we haven't done before.